ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय तन अपि राजेन्द्र प्रजा सर्ग धियो मुनि उपेत्य नारद प्राह वाचा कूतानि पूर्ववत्। O King Parikrit, Narad Muni approached these sons of Prajapati Daksha, who were engaged in tapasya to beget children, and spoke enigmatic words to them, just as he had spoken to their elder brothers. Text 30. Dakshayana samsrinuta garato nigamam mama anvichantanu paravim bratrinam bratrivatsara. Translation. The sons of Daksha, O sons of Daksha, please hear my words of instruction attentively. You are all very affectionate to your elder brothers, the Haryasvas. Therefore you should follow their path. Purport. Narad Muni encouraged Prajapati Daksha's second group of sons by awakening their natural affinity for the brothers. He urged them to follow their older brothers if they were at all affectionate towards them. Family affection is very strong, and therefore Narad Muni followed this tactic of reminding them of their family relationships with the Haryasvas. Generally, the word nigama refers to the Vedas, but here nigama refers to the instructions contained in the Vedas. Srimad Bhagavatam says, nigama kalpataror valitam phalam. The Vedic instructions are like a tree of which Srimad Bhagavatam is the ripened fruit. Narad Muni is engaged in distributing this fruit, and therefore he instructed Vyasadeva to write this Mahapurana. Srimad Bhagavatam, for the benefit of ignorant human society. Anartopastamam sakshat bhakti yogam adhoksaje lokas yajanato vidvams chakre satvata samhitam. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore the learned Vyasadeva compiled this Vedic literature, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. Bhagavatam 176. People are suffering because of ignorance and are following a wrong path for happiness. This is called anartha. These material activities will never make them happy. And therefore, Narada instructed Vyasadeva to record the instructions of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vyasadeva actually followed Narada and did this. Srimad Bhagavatam is the supreme instruction of the Vedas. Galitam phalam, the ripened fruit of the Vedas, is Srimad Bhagavatam. So now the second group of brothers have manifest, and they are now performing their austerities. So it's by austerities that one is able to nicely perform one's chanting of the holy names, and one is able to understand the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. This is a very essential item in the devotional path, is that one must control the senses and bring them, and restrict them so that the attention goes from the senses to the actual spiritual subject. This is a very essential point. One So Narad, the sons of Prajapati have started performing austerities and chanting their mantras, but they are performing the austerities for material benefit. So they are doing duty, but they want the fruit of their activity. And because of this, then their situation is pious. It's auspicious, but it is not actually perfect. So we see here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada is pointing out that Narad Muni, he speaks the essence of the Vedas. And the Shashvalas, they are following the instruction of the Vedas. But now Narad instructed Vyasadeva he should give the essence of the Vedas. Otherwise, then what is happening is the Vedic literature is there, and so many people are following it, but following it for the purpose of material benefit. They're not actually understanding what the Veda is for. So Narad Muni knows the essence of the Veda because he's received the Chaturshloki from Lord Brahma. And he is applying this in his speaking of the philosophy of the Veda. He is speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is that essence. Now he asked Vyasadeva to compile that essence as the Srimad Bhagavatam, because then from that one can understand what is the actual purpose of the Vedic literatures, the Vedic activities. So here then the point comes is that if one performs the Vedic activities, but without really knowing their purpose, one ends up with a material fruit, a pious material fruit. At the same time, if one, from seeing that, well, there's just some material fruit, or one is not interested in such things, he may give up the Vedic literatures and give up following the Vedas because of lack of understanding. So both of these are a fault, and Narad Muni here is correcting pious persons. We see many times he is correcting a pious person who is following the Vedic literature. So here one is following austerities for the, I'd say, the benefit of the household of life, but with material fruit in mind. And Narad Muni is saving them from this understanding. Then we see also with Maharaj Ruchina Bhartisha, he was performing also karmakanda sacrifices for the same purpose. But that was a little bit more, just his own satisfaction. Well, here at least the Shashvalas are trying to please their father. So in either case, both are following the Vedic literature but not understanding what is the purpose. So the Bhagavatam then shows us how to follow the Vedic culture but with the purpose of pleasing the Lord. This is very essential. The Vedic culture itself is not thrown out because that is its purpose. The purpose of the Vedic culture is to create a situation that we can go back to Godhead very easily. So we are able to engage all our different activities in the Lord's service. So, and there's different personalities. They're conditioned in so many different ways. So there's many different ways that they are attracted. So here we see that Narad Muni, on the other brothers, the first set of brothers, he came and immediately just started speaking analogies. Then after speaking the analogy, then they understood and they became God conscious. So now with the second set of brothers, the mood is slightly different. So he's coming and first he's saying, you have affection for your brothers. Now they follow the transcendental path, so if you really have affection for them, you'll follow their path. Because if you have affection for them, you will follow their values. And their values is to go back to Godhead. So by following their path, that'll be the actual show of affection for them. So then this is being presented by Narad Muni.
But his purpose is to get them to come to the essence of devotional life. But we see here is the affections, the emotions are engaged in the Lord's service. Because through this, that affection for those brothers, that will bring them to the platform of transcendence. So the activities of the Vedic culture, the relationships of the Vedic culture, the interactions of the Vedic culture, these are not in any way a difficulty. So whether one is situated as brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, this is not a difficulty. This is proper. According to our conditioning, we'll be attracted to a particular situation of exchange between devotees. But Narad Muni is pointing out that's not enough. Being pious is not enough. Like that. The heavenly planets are full of pious people, but they're not going back to Godhead. So therefore, that piety, what is the use? So unless that piety is engaged in Krishna's service, or we say yukta vairagya means everything has to be engaged in Krishna's service. So this pious activity must also be engaged. But when we engage it in Krishna's service, this means the results are His. Right? The results belong to Krishna. It's His activity, and we are doing it for Him. So then by doing this, then we become purified of those attachments, and we progress on the path back to Godhead. So this is what's being brought out at this point, is that the Vedic literatures are there as a starting point for the conditioned soul, but they must be understood and practiced according to the essence, or the conclusion of the Vedic literature. And that conclusion is given here in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So then in the last of the purport, Srimad Prabhupada mentions people are suffering because of ignorance and are following the wrong path for happiness. So even someone is very pious, he is very well situated, position, nice family, security, land, wealth, still they are suffering. Means if they weren't suffering, then we have to ask ourselves, then why are so many people, why in the Bhagavatam are greatly elevated persons like Pulakit, who has so much wealth? Why is not happy? Kardama, you know, is so nicely situated. But then none of them are satisfied. So even the pious activities are not giving us satisfaction, let alone impious. Therefore, the first thing is to go from impious to pious activities by following here, Prabhupada mentioned the previous verse, the four regulative principles. And then taking up the proper Vaishnava etiquette and culture, then using that in Krishna's service. So by following the Vaishnava culture for pleasing Krishna, then there is satisfaction, because this is not done in ignorance. So according to the essence of the Vedic literature, even following the Vedas without knowing Krishna is the goal, and without knowing devotional service is the process, without properly understanding our relationship with the Lord, that is ignorance. Even we may be highly learned. Right? Excuse me, not highly learned. We may be learned. Highly learned means one has actual understanding. So learning itself cannot get us back to Godhead. This is pointed out. Learning does not mean, it's very important that we understand how the Vedic literature is using these words. When we say learning, this does not mean we've studied Bhagavatam nicely and studied Gita nicely and we understand the conclusions. That is transcendental. That's the natural devotional proclivity of the soul. So that is not an endeavor. Right? The endeavor is not to take up devotional activities. That's natural. Though in the beginning we may not be accustomed to it, but that's the natural activity. Engaging in materialistic activities without pleasing Krishna, that is endeavor. Right? So endeavor, over endeavor must be given up. Prayasa. Right? This is the atyahara prayasascha. So prayasa must be given up. This endeavor for material gain. So here, when we talk about knowledge will not get you to Krishna, means by our academic knowledge, by our academic abilities, we are very knowledgeable according to worldly standards, this will not get us Krishna. So that's a difference between that study and sitting with devotees, hearing about the Lord, reading about the Lord, hearing from bona fide devotees. So we're hearing material knowledge, not from bona fide devotees. That is material knowledge. And while we're hearing from bona fide devotees, that is spiritual. So that is, one is natural, the other is unnatural. So when we have so much knowledge, we know so many nice activities, and we perform those, but it's not being done to please the Lord, then that is ignorance. That is ignorance. This is the actual definition. This is the definition of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is the conclusion of the Vedic. So this is also the Vedic conclusion. We will see when we are, the Vedas discuss activities for living entities. They'll discuss so many you can do. Okay, you want to do materialistic activities? Okay, this is how you do it. You know, he gives, 50 rules. How to do a materialistic activity. Then after that, one has heard all that and one sees how much endeavor there is, how much prayasa is there. Then, in a few shlokas, then the Vedas will say, but better than that, or more important, or if you want the highest goal, then you don't do any of that. Then you do this. Right? That is the way the Vedic literature works. Just like the child wants to do so many crazy things. Okay, if you want to do those things, this is what you have to do. But if you are not, if you actually want a higher principle, then you do it this way. Srila Prabhupada would also use this. I think we had one devotee, I think it was Pajumna or someone, wanted to learn Sanskrit. So they had a very, they were already working for Prabhupada. Prabhupada showed how to break the words, do the word for word, how to do the transliterations. But they thought, oh, this is very nice, I should learn more. So they came to Prabhupada and said, I would like to study more Sanskrit. Get very deep into the Sanskrit. So Prabhupada said, okay, if you want to do that, then you go to Varanasi and you study Sanskrit for 12 years. That's what you do. You want to learn Sanskrit? That's what it takes. 12 years, strict regulation and strict study. Then, at the end of the same sentence, he says, but if you want to help me, then you'll stay right where you are and do the service you're doing. It means you already know the Sanskrit you need to do your service. But if you're interested in mundane knowledge, then you have to go to Varanasi and get it. You have to go there 12 years. Then you can say, yes, I know Sanskrit. But if you actually want to do something transcendental, then you just be satisfied with what you're doing now. So this is a typical way the Vedas will present the knowledge. Is that if you have overwhelmed with material desire, okay, then this is what you do. Because once you get into material desire, it becomes very complicated. Because you bring in, you're not dealing just between you, Krishna, and the philosophy of the devotees. Now you bring in all the demigods, all the sages, all the forefathers. Right? Means Brahmacharya doesn't have to worry about all that. Right? He's just performs, he only has to worry about Brahman. Right? So rules are very less. But if he wants to get married, then in the marriage, then you're coming in a dynasty, forefathers are there, that means that are there just before you. Then that originates in the sages. The demigods are controlling all the senses and all that, because now the senses, they're your senses. The student, then he's doing everything for the teacher. But now you're doing for yourself. So now you have to consider all this. Now there's 33 million demigods. There's quite a lot of sages and forefathers, there's tons of them. So that requires a lot of activity in considering all that. So therefore, everything becomes very expansive. Now, if one understands that one is doing even these activities for Krishna and actually acting in that way, then again we're left just with Krishna. And then just those few things that we have to do that are proper for the ashram. But you cut out the demigods, you cut out the forefathers, you cut out the sages, you cut out the ghosts, and you know the common people, all that's being cut out. So a lot of energy is saved only because we're connecting it to Krishna. So this is what the Bhagavatam is recommending, is that one become knowledgeable. Because performing the Vedic activities for oneself, that is not knowledge, that's ignorance. Because if we're a servant of Krishna, we'll do something for our master. Right? Servant serves the master. That's just the system. Like that. We have to be independent to not serve the master. So if we look at it factually, only Krishna is independent. Even all of his expansions, they are independent for us, but they are not independent of Krishna. Right? Vaikuntha Panti is not independent of Krishna. He is also a servant of Krishna. But for us, he is independent. So if we actually have knowledge, then we will not be suffering. Because then we know whatever we're doing is for Krishna. Then we are satisfied. So by Vyasadeva's good qualities of following the instruction of a spiritual master, then we are given the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then that's handed down to the Acharyas, then we are able to gain the same understanding and knowledge that the Hayasvas and the Shashvalas were able to gain. Any questions on this? Comments? It was that boring.
Yeah. You were saying that by following Vedic culture but not aiming towards Krishna, it's still ignorance. Why not just chant Hare Krishna and not worry so much about the Vedic culture?
Okay. Question is if we follow the Vedic culture but not for Krishna, then that is considered ignorance. So then why don't we not worry about the Vedic culture and just chant Hare Krishna? So that's the first option that Krishna recommends. That's the best thing. We just sit down somewhere and chant Hare Krishna. But that's what it means. We sit down and we chant Hare Krishna. If we start worrying about, well, where am I going to sleep tonight, what am I going to eat, what am I going to wear, you know, I've chanted, I'd like to go talk with some people, you know, or other things like that, worrying about our protection, then we're not on that platform of just chanting Hare Krishna. Then we have to take shelter of one of the supporting systems of the Pancharatra and the Vedic culture that goes below that. So as long as one can simply perform preaching activities or deity worship fully, no other need, without worrying about also the same thing. So you have a place to stay, you have some things, and people, you can go, you know, people may give you something and you use it. But that's all you do. Then you can take shelter of just the Pancharatra. But if you have any other nature, any other conditioned nature than Brahminical, and you have any other need than what you gain from just preaching and performing deity worship, then you have to take advantage of the Vedic culture. Because that's then the next step down. That's working for Krishna. Krishna says, you surrender to me. That's best. If you can't do that, follow the rules and regulations of sadhana bhakti. And if you can't do that, then work for me. So in work for me, we see in the purport, and Prabhupada starts talking about going ashram. So those are the options. Then the next option is, if you can't do that, can't work for Krishna, then you can follow the Vedic culture, the Just giving charity would be nice, like that. That's the next option. So that's what is being offered. Because otherwise, the other approaches don't really give a good result. They don't give a good result. Isn't it? Means following much of just the Western conditioning, then we have dealt with our cows. And are our cows happy? Right? Dealing with our Western conditioning, we have run educational institutions. Are our students happy? Dealing as Westerners like to deal with their women, are our women happy? Right? There's not enough old people to find out how they're feeling. Right? And you know, there's no real concept of what a Brahmin is. So, but if you talk to Pujaris and others who are mainly into just preaching and that, then they sometimes have, they're not satisfied. Because other considerations are more important. Some economic, some managerial, and not actually just pure preaching. Or pure deity worship. So following Western conditioning, none of these persons who are supposed to be protected are satisfied. Because the West doesn't really deal with it. Now they're coming up with something, seeing the problems that they've done by leaving the moralistic lifestyle of, you know, Judaic Christian backgrounds and just taking up, you know, morbid materialism. Then these people have become very disenfranchised. And then, so they're trying to work out some new deal, you know, for the new world order, so that all these personalities are satisfied. Of course, much to the expense of each other. Right? But some endeavor is there. But how do you know what will actually satisfy someone? Because we see here, even pious materialism doesn't satisfy someone, let alone impious materialism. It's only Krishna consciousness. So therefore, what that leaves is that the Vedic culture deals with this very strongly. In other words, the idea that these five have to be protected comes from the Vedic culture. So that means the Vedic culture must deal with this. And if devotees have found that there's been a lack of it, it's because we have not followed what the Vedas tell us to do. That's simple. It's what Prabhupada has told us, how to deal with all these personalities we have not done. We can't claim we've tried it. Otherwise, we tried it, it wouldn't work. But because we didn't try it properly, then it didn't work. So the options aren't really great. The Krishnaized Western paradigm doesn't really work. We've tried that. That's what's failed. We have yet to take up Prabhupada's instructions on how to follow the Vedic culture. Now we see in the Bhagavatam so many people who have followed it and become perfect and have been satisfied. So therefore, the culture has to be there. Right? Means as soon as we start talking about artha and kama, there must be dharma first. It's a natural progression. From dharma comes artha, from that comes kama. And then from that, then you get fed up and then you want moksha. So the Vedic, the materialistic Vedas work in that way. First you go for karma. And you perform dharma. So then naturally from that artha comes. You get wealth, you get position, you get whatever anybody wants nowadays. Then from that the senses are taken care of in a very proper fashion, a non-sinful way. But then, even you've got all that, you're not satisfied, so then you want liberation. But then from platform liberation, there's no satisfaction. So again, the mind wants activity, it comes back to dharma. And just keeps going in a circle like this. So what Narad Muni is suggesting is you take up dharma, but not for the purpose of artha, but for the purpose of developing love for Krishna. Right? Then the cycle doesn't the lower levels come automatically, but we do not get caught up in it ourselves. We do not get distracted by artha and kama, or by dharma itself, but we follow that to get prema. Then it's devotional service. Following the Vedic culture for Krishna is devotional service. Following sadhana bhakti for Krishna is devotional service. Chanting Hare Krishna for Krishna is devotional service. Otherwise, Mayavadis also chant Hare Krishna, but not for Krishna. They want to go to the Brahman or something else. So the activity must be done for Krishna. Then it becomes devotional service. Is that making sense? So one has to understand what we're dealing with. You know, means this is the point of lack of, we can't be in ignorance. If we don't understand with the body, we don't understand that the body, we're conditioned to the body, we're conditioned to the mind, and because of that conditioning, this body has been created. The conditioning of the mind has created the body, so we have these both gross and subtle conditionings. And if we're intelligent, we'll use them in Krishna's service, means see what they are and use it. Problem is we're afraid to look at it. We're afraid to actually understand what is my conditioning. Because when we understand it, then I have to deal with it. And it's much easier to stay in some, you know, self-made concept of what I am, rather than just, I'm conditioned, I'm fallen. I have sensible desires. And so therefore, I should take care of that. You know? And then see how to do that so it satisfies Krishna. Right? What does Krishna give, how I can engage my desires in his service? Right? I have unlimited desires, so what is the way that I can engage them? Then, that is devotional service. Otherwise, we're performing devotional service. If we're chanting, we're following sadhana, we're doing something, that's of course. But we're not fully recognizing our position, so we're not getting the full benefit of what we could get. That's why anartha nivritti is considered a very serious point, turning point in our spiritual life, from unsteady devotional service to steady devotional service. It's when we recognize that I have problems and I'm willing to look at them and figure out how to overcome them. Not just talk about them, just to feel them, but to actually deal with them. That. Take the bull by the horns and actually try to do something with it. Try to remove them. Then we move on very nicely. Because the point is the holy name will take them all away. It's not a difficult thing. So Krishna is just waiting for us to recognize that. Right? He's waiting for us to recognize that we're his servant and that we want to love him. And then Krishna, we take one step for Krishna, he'll take 10 towards us. So now in that process, you can't be attached to Krishna and attached to Maya. So part of the process is we recognize that I'm attached to Maya and not to Krishna. And I want to give that up. And as soon as we do that, we take one step towards trying to remove these. Krishna will take 10 steps to remove them. So the process is very sweet and nice, but we do have to come to the reality of recognizing what we're dealing with. That we do have sinful desires, we do have so many even pious desires. But that pious desires will also keep us from Krishna. If we want piety for ourselves, it will still keep us from Krishna. So therefore, impious and pious desires must be given up. So impious desires, impious activities, both are given up. Pious desires engaged in Krishna's service, in pious activities, that then is devotional service. And as we advance, then the sadhana and the chanting of the holy name become more and more prominent until we are completely freed from the conditioned nature, then all we have is the chanting of the holy name. Someone on the platform of Bhava, there is no conditioned nature. So all they have is the chanting. They don't have to worry about sadhana anymore, they don't have to worry about the Vedic culture. Like that. They may follow it to give example to others, but otherwise, that's all they need. And if one is an advanced devotee, then he just needs the chanting and the sadhana. Though he may follow the Vedic culture to set example, because advanced devotee means he preaches. But for the Kanista, then he also needs that culture. Because otherwise, how is he going to engage his activities? He has desires, he has to engage them. So, where are you going to get that? You know, where is the book that tells how to engage it? You know, so unless one wants to be very careful about how his kitchen is kosher or something, then one has to take up the Vedic culture. Does that make sense?
Yes.
One doubt that I've got in your answer is if we perform pious activities and give the result to Krishna, then isn't that nishkam karma?
Oh yes, that's a very advanced level of nishkam karma. That's what I'd recommend.
It doesn't really fit under the definition of uttama bhakti.
Well, uttama bhakti starts at bhava. So if one is below bhava, then nishkam karma yoga is highly recommended.
I'm speaking of the uttama bhakti as defined in Hanyavi Rajasya
Sunyam. Oh, I see.
Where favorability is,
okay.
Is discussed in terms of whether Krishna wants.
Oh, so then how do we engage our eating in Krishna's service?
We eat according to his direction.
Yes, so that's called the Vedic culture. That's all we're saying. The Vedic culture performed for Krishna is the real pious activity. I only use these terms because nowadays I see batted around a term called social development, and its main thrust is how to get money for the Grihastha community, and how for the Grihasthas to not kill each other or their kids and their dealings. So they're wanting a result. And that's what the talk is. I've heard for the last 2 years. No one's talking about in that. Then the question comes, should we follow the paradigm Krishna gives on how we'll work together and get our economic development? Or do we follow the Mormons or the Amish or, you know, what's it called, Pondicherry? Do they have an interesting thing happening down there? Or, you know, so many other paradigms. So all I'm pointing out is that Krishna's paradigm, which is the Vedic culture, is the best system to follow. One can follow others. Krishna will accept it. He makes that point in the 18th chapter. He will accept it, whatever it is, whatever modes it's in. But he's recommending for us, because he doesn't want to see us suffer, we take those ones that are based on goodness. Because then it's goodness means the reactions are less materially less disturbing. So it's recommended like that. So pious here, my definition is the Bhagavatam piety, means activity that's engaged in Krishna's service. That is the piety meant. But pious activities not engaged in Krishna's service are useless. They're ignorance. That's what's being described by Prabhupada in the purport. So therefore, the Vedic culture, Western culture, doesn't matter. It's all thrown out. His devotional service basically stops after the first three recommendations of Krishna. Either fully surrender, or follow sadhana bhakti, or work for Krishna. So in work for Krishna, we may still be conditioned by the modes. And we may still do things that are very passionate or ignorant. But we're doing it for Krishna. So it may be sakam instead of nishkam. So of the two, nishkam karma yoga is more recommended. The 11th canto brings this out very clearly. If you read the 11th canto in the Uddhava Gita, then these terms Prabhupada uses them very freely.
It seems that there is some differences of opinion by the Acharyas have regarding nishkam karma yoga, whether it's actually uttama bhakti or not.
I think if you check, there's no contradiction between the Acharyas. See, is basically the only main differences that you'll see is the presentation. See, Prabhupada's presentation, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's, Baladeva Vidyabhushan's, and then what is being given here by Narad Muni has the same presentation. That whatever is in relationship with Krishna is devotional service. Now, Vishwanath, so that's the general viewpoint, and then all levels of bhakti can take advantage of this. So the Uttama, the Madhyam, and the Kanista are very satisfied. Vishwanath, for the benefit of the Madhyamas, then points out that if you, to make us more serious, that Uttama Bhakti starts, the glimmers of it, at Bhava. Actually, Bhakti is defined from the platform of Prema. Anything before that is actually not Bhakti. It's aspiring for Bhakti, but it's not Bhakti, because Bhakti means love. So you can't replace love with rules or anything else. So he points out that this point to one should be very clear on, then understand that the process to get to Prema, to pure unalloyed devotional service, is through pure devotional service, which means engaging your activities in the Lord's service. So there's no contradiction. It's just a matter of which angle you want to look at it from. If you want to look at it from the top down, or from the bottom up, like this. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would very much take these terms and spread, broaden them. Like in Bhav Sadhana, the sadhana of Bhava Bhakti, then the first three terms, the first term is, what is it called? Shravandas, where one hears about one's spiritual identity. Varnadas is then adjusting with that and trying to perform your spiritual activities with that mood. Then Smarandas, then one fully absorbs oneself in thinking of this, and one is completely comes to the platform of Samadhi. Then that will mature into Apandas or Prema Bhakti, or pure unalloyed devotional service. So now, that's the typical definition. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur spreads these first three down to when we first, Shravandas means hearing that we're Krishna's servant. So whether that's coming from impious atheistic life into devotional life, when we hear that I am Krishna's servant, that is called Shravandas. It matures and reaches its perfection when we understand our spiritual form. But that whole thing from Shraddha up to Bhava, that whole thing is called Shravandas. Then Varnadas is we practice that. And we actually try to engage ourselves nicely in the devotional process. And Smarandas, we remember the Lord and His activities and how we are His servant. And that attains its perfection in Samadhi. So it's just a matter if the principle remains the same. It's just the detail of what you're presenting, how you are trying to... Okay, you say? What is your purpose? What is the purpose of your presentation? Because if we see Vishwanath, he always takes these points and very analytically breaks them up. Just so that specifically the Madhyama can understand how much is there. Like anarthas. Okay, we know there's anarthas are there. But now, then that gets broken up into a more technical detail. And then we're able to identify very nicely what they are. So that's he gives that technical. It's all supportive of the nectar of devotion. He generally takes a verse from the nectar of devotion or part and then gives details of that will be useful for our devotional development. Is that
the Nandi Nandi Nashikrasuni's verse is what the nectar of devotion expands from every aspect of it. Including Vaidisarva Bhakti, including Kanishta Adhikari. So the inference from that is that even on a Kanishta platform, one can be engaging in pure devotional service.
Yes. Yes. Pure devotional service means that its purpose is pure. It doesn't mean that our heart is pure. This is the difference. The viewpoint of the advanced devotees is pure devotional service means that which is done with the pure goal. It's to pure please Krishna. Though we may be full of anarthas, and our performance of the activity itself, we may not be pure, but because our goal is pure, therefore it's accepted that way. The faults are overlooked. So this platform has this kind of devotional service, pure devotional service, then in the realm of sadhana has two levels, sakam karma yoga and nishkam karma yoga. Sakam means I'm interested more in the service and I engage in the Krishna service. And nishkam is I'm more interested in what Krishna wants done and I do that for Krishna. So these are just technical terminology of the same thing. It's just like Prabhupada says, spontaneous devotional service. The Sanskrit is called Raga Muda Bhakti. So in these other aspects, that the technical term is Sakam Karma Yoga, Nishkam Karma Yoga. But they're both considered pure devotional service. But they are also mentioned as Misra Bhakti, Karma Misra, Jnana Misra, so that we understand that our heart is still contaminated and we still have work to do until we get to the platform of prema. Because then there must be always, you can set the balance by knowing the two sides. If we study, if we understand what is Mayavad and what is Sahajya, then we can understand the pure line of devotional service. And then we don't go either way. So you must always balance these points. If we just say pure devotional service, if we look back ourselves when we joined the movement, basically we thought within 3 years we were going to be pure Aleloya devotees, Nitya Siddhas. And we're acting and going on in that way. But then, after some time, we find that, no, the anartas in the heart is still there. So then, this other way of looking at it is to point out is that the ecstasy of devotional service and what you're doing, that remains. But also know that if you want that to continue, you have to look for these anartas. And if you don't, then there'll be problem. As we see today, devotees go on, but they're not willing to look at their anartas. And then, because of that, then we're not able to progress nicely. Because we become distracted from devotional service, because we don't have how to engage those anartas in the Lord's service. Because it's like it's commonly said, well, in the beginning we just chanted Hare Krishna, left, lived in the temple, depended upon the temple, and then what do we got? Everything fell apart. We can't do that. We have to be practical. So what does that mean? That means is the desire is pure devotional service. And generally you ask any devotee, his goal, their goal is to become a pure and loyal devotee of Krishna. So their goal is proper. So that's called pure devotional service, whatever what they perform. But they also have to know the tools to perform it. Is that one has to know the aspects of karma and jnana that are engaged. That's what the Gita is describing. First six chapters are describing the karma aspect of engaging in devotional service. And the last six are describing the jnana aspect. So jnana and vairag. Then one advances. But when one comes to bhava, then jnana and vairag are no longer the measure. Then it's how much you're developing prema. But while we have the conditioned nature, we always have to be on the lookout to gain the knowledge of Krishna and the material world, and to become detached from the material world. So by that jnana and vairagya, we become detached from the material world, attached to Krishna. So then we get that balance. Is that?
I'm still kind of stuck on the original inquiry that I had. There's two elements of favorability. One is that you're doing it for Krishna's pleasure. Okay, your answer satisfies that. But then the other element is as Krishna, doing it as Krishna desires. Now, that it seems that a lot of what you're describing is what I desire, but I'm going to offer it to Krishna, hoping that he'll like it. Now, I might want to please Krishna, but the point is, what does Krishna want?
Yeah, that's what Krishna wants is called Nishkam Karma Yoga. And what I want is called Sakam Karma Yoga. So generally for the Kanista, he'll find himself on the first platform. It's also known, another technical term is called Aropya Bhakti. Is that I project on devotional service what I like. Like I think cauliflowers are the best, so therefore I offer that to Krishna. Then as we go on, then we find out, well, Krishna seems to like spinach and he likes, you know, all these other kinds of things. So then I will balance the cauliflower into its place. So that's the difference between the two platforms, the Sakam and Nishkam.
I thought that Sakam meant that there was an enjoyment of the result, not
Yes.
But there was an attachment that remained to the service.
There may be an attachment to the remain to the service, but without that attachment, how is the conditioned soul going to go on? I mean, let's say someone is very intelligent. They naturally like to do that kind of service that uses their intelligence. But it's very minimal. That's why Krishna gives the process of jnana in devotional service. There's understanding how the technicalities of the material world work. That. Because we have to understand the Madhyama is still, there's still something to go. There's still, one still has to come to the Uttama platform. So Uttama Bhakti is of three kinds, Kanistha Madhyama Uttam. This is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the pastime of Tapa and Misra. So all three levels can be pure devotional service. It's just a matter of our faith and realization. Then that establishes the platform of it. So something is there. Otherwise, it would be pure unalloyed. That's why there's a difference made. See, this is the thing: is Baladeva and the other charis mainly emphasize pure devotional service. Vishwanath makes a difference between pure devotional service and pure unalloyed devotional service. Because there's a difference. Pure devotional service can get you as high as Vaikuntha. Only pure unalloyed devotional service can get you into Vrindavan. So at some point that the all desires must be given up. So even in the platform of the Uttamadhikari and Bhava, there still may be some desires for liberation. But liberation itself must be given up. Then you have pure unalloyed devotional service. Otherwise, if you don't give it up, as long as you give up Sayuja, you can go to Vaikuntha. You can get to Dwarka. But if we want to get into Vrindavan, then pure unalloyed must be given up. So basically what I'm speaking on is the, how do you say, performing the activity that Krishna wants. So my emphasis is Krishna gives the philosophy and he gives the process and the culture that goes with the process. So we see Prabhupada in his purports gives us the Vedic culture, what we need to know of it. So that is what we must take. So the actual emphasis is on the point that we must take what Krishna wants us to do. But I'll speak more on the aspect, because it's generally seen that many don't want to do that. They want to do what they want to do for Krishna. So you have to start there, like here, with these Shashvalas. Narad Muni is just starting with the brothers. Oh, your brothers are there, you have affection for them, why don't you follow their path? So he's starting at that level. Then we'll see, he'll go to the next level, and then he'll bring them to the topmost level. So the emphasis that I'm speaking on is that we perform those activities that Krishna wants us to do. But right now I see it's more of a matter of devotees becoming convinced that that's what they should do. Because many have very different ideas. They feel that just use the Western culture in Krishna's service is good enough. And in fact, we should standardize that. It means if someone's following Vedic culture, we should bring them down from that and establish them on the Western culture. Now, I've heard it. I mean, suddenly many of these email conferences, this is what it said. It said very strictly, it said, let us say, you have a Western woman following her culture. You have Indian women following theirs. Indian women aren't complaining if the Western women do whatever they do. But the Western women who were on this conference, we're just taking individuals, are complaining, no, these women are conditioned by thousands of years of Vedic culture that they have to deal nicely in the family with the husband and that interactions. This should be broken. This is nonsense. It's right there. And this is spoken by leading women of our movement who speak on these things. I'll avoid names, but if you need, I can supply. So here is the thing, is that they say we must make one standard. So the one standard naturally is the lowest common denominator. But what I'm saying is, let us look at what Krishna gives us and try to take what Krishna gives us and try to perform that in the mood of pure devotional service, rather than the beginning stages that we've gone through, is we've come from, you know, Western culture. We've engaged that in Krishna service. That's fine. We've advanced. Devotees have become very advanced, very mature. But I do feel it's time now that devotees are looking for actual social structures and actual interactions to take seriously what Prabhupada has given us in the way of the Vedic culture. That was, so that may have caused the confusion where it looked more with emphasis on the that the one side than the other. Does that make any
sense?
Well, these are very technical points, so I mean, the whole book is written on just the one point. But a lot of this is discussed in the 11th canto, Uddhava Gita. It takes, where the Gita leaves off on this point of this Nishkam Karma Yoga, then the Uddhava Gita takes it further. So that makes things also a little more clear. Okay, so what ends here? Antarashtra Bhagavatam Ki, Jai, Shiva Prabhupada Ki, Jai, 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 Jai,